Guys, Roland here. Now, is it possible that life is eternal, beautiful, and perfect as it is? I mean, I could tell you what I think, but I think it's better if I have this conversation with this amazing guest you get to meet right after this. Welcome to Conversations with Roland, where the goal of this show is to learn life secrets through diverse experiences. I am your host, Roland Achenjang. Guys, welcome to another episode of Conversations with Roland. As always, I am super excited to record these conversations, and today is no different. Today with me is an amazing guest who is a technology project manager, a father, a husband, an author, and an NDEer. And what I mean by that is he had a near-death experience. He, along with his partner, cataloged this experience in his beautiful book. It's a best-selling book, The Place Between Here and There, A True Story. What's unique about this is it's actually kind of a shared death experience. And if you listen to previous conversations, I've talked to guests who have had similar experiences. But my guest absolutely is a fan of spiritual conversations, which we're about to have here. And it's my absolute pleasure to welcome Steve Weber to Conversations with Roland. Steve, welcome. How are you?
What up? I'm doing great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing this time with me and having this discussion. And I really look forward to sharing with your audience. So thank you.
Likewise. Conversations like this really what I call get me going. It's really nice to learn from people's experiences and then use that as a benchmark to improve our own experiences. So I'm excited for this.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, all set to go. Thank you. Thank you once again.
Yeah. Now, Steve, I was able to listen to the audiobook version of your book. It's a wonderful book. And I mean, in this conversation, I want us to dive into certain topics that I picked up throughout the book that were fascinating to me. And for anybody who's listening, I invite you to actually take the time to get a copy of the book or the audiobook, or if you care to, watch previous conversations and interviews that Stephen has had along with his partner, Catherine Plant, who's not with us today, with other, you know, guests or with other show hosts. Fascinating stuff, definitely worth the listen. So, yeah.
Yeah, Ron, I want to mention something about that and about the book and sharing it with people in general is that it's definitely it's a book that we made to be about real life. It's not about, you know, a lot of, you know, and in the past when people discuss spirituality, often they go so far in the clouds that it's tough for one to relate to. But this is a real life experience that we share with people. And, you know, the book is called The Place Between Here and There, you know, and you may cry during it and you certainly will laugh, but at the end, you'll be feeling great about it. And the reason why I was so eager to be on the show, you had asked me in our pre-talk and I had forgotten, but no, it was the meditations and what a big part that's become of mine and Kathy's life. Kathy spends a lot of time writing meditations and meditations with a purpose, you know, the purpose for yourself, as well as collecting energy from everyone and putting it out into the world is to provide some guidance and a counterbalance to all the challenges that we face. Now, what was really excited me about coming on here and why I reached out to you was the fact of the meditations. And it can bring you peace, but it could also channel your energy to really help the experience here on Earth for all of us.
Man, you're speaking my language, Stephen. You know I love meditation. That has been my path to my spiritual awakening. It's something I do every day. And it has just opened up so many doors for me. And it's helped me understand that, you know, yoga is basically a way to communicate with your higher self and bring in these new energies. And as they're moving through your body and rearranging, you end up in these different positions. It's helped me appreciate Tai Chi. It's helped me appreciate, honestly, and you mentioned this, just about every experience you can possibly have on Earth. And we're going to touch on this because Part of your Nedlith experience helped you realize this when you were up in what you call the place between here and there, in one of the three distinct, you know, experiences that you had in that space. You saw that your life as a technology, you know, working with technology was actually a spiritual experience as well. And when you mentioned that, many times when people try to bring up this topic of spirituality, they kind of make it go out there when you can just really bring it back to every basic thing that every single person is doing. And I don't know how you feel about that, but I certainly do appreciate it. So
thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Speaking my language.
Man. Okay. So let's do this. In reading your book, right at the beginning, you know, you describe when you had the accident and how you got flown to the hospital. And somewhere in there, you mentioned that luck was on your side. Now, having gone through an NDE, what is your current understanding of luck and how it plays a role in our experiences?
I think I put luck and coincidences in the same category. I think there's very few of them. And I think that it's a divine grace that I've begun to understand. There's a divine grace that surrounds us. It's not necessarily to protect us, but the divine grace is to guide us, because our experiences are everything here on earth. It's our very reason for being here. And so yes, it's definitely a process. And so, that's what I want to say about that.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Thank you. Now, you co-wrote this book with your partner. So I don't know whose idea it was to pick up this Rumi quote, right? but I loved it, because I have that same quote in my book, and I know many people who are on the spiritual path are familiar with the Rumi quote, right? There's a space where, like, beyond your ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field, and I'll meet you there. So love that quote. It's so beautiful. But so whose idea was it to put it in?
Okay. Complete honesty. It was Shawnee's. Shawnee is I call him my spirit son, but he's our daughter's fiance, and he's a big time meditator. And he's a young kid. But he's well beyond his years. Like, some things, he's like this big guru. Other things, he's like a dopey kid. you know, it's tough to reconcile the two. But that quote is very meaningful, because it kind of describes the meditative state of mind. That you know, beyond that, I'll meet you there. What is he talking about? What is Rumi talking about? Is it a place? Is it a state of mind? I could think, yes, it's a place between here, but no, the place between here and there, that really isn't the purpose, I don't think. No, I think what Rumi is talking about there is the meditative state of mind. I'll meet you there. And that's my interpretation.
That's your interpretation? I love it. Mm-hmm. I think it's really not a place or a state of mind. It's just the expression of unconditional love. It could be right here, right now as well. It's unconditional love. There are no conditions. You might think it's right. You might think it's wrong. It's just, right? It's neither.
It is.
So that's, yeah.
I feel it.
Yeah. All right, Steve. So your background, you're kind of raised Catholic. And I think that influence was, you know, revealed itself in your book, because you used the word purgatory. And why did you think where you were was purgatory?
Okay, so when I compared it to purgatory, because those of you let me share, in the Catholic faith, purgatory is a place where you go where you're not in the right state of being in order to enter into heaven yet. But you weren't so terrible that you would be punished in the way that traditional Catholicism sees things. And so you would go to purgatory where you kind of like do your time and learn things. And so in some ways it was very similar to that idea, because that it was the learning part, but it wasn't the punishing part. It wasn't that I was being punished, or I wasn't good enough, or I didn't earn. It had nothing to do with that. What the place between here and there, to me, my understanding, it was a natural death process. Your body goes through both a physical and a spiritual transformation to be born. I mean, think about being born, that whole process and the evolution of your spirit and the incarnation of that. And that's a natural process that happens, but so does the death process. And so that's what I was experiencing, that actual death process where I was being prepared to return to spirit. And so that's what the place was. It was to ease that transition, to help guide me from being in earth to being prepared to return into spirit. But I didn't die. And I think that is what is happening now, is that because of technology, people who would normally have passed are not passing. And when they survive, they're surviving intact. I was so damaged. My back, I had all these tubes and rods in my back, even now, all this metal and stuff. You know, it was just so close. So more and more people are going to share these near-death experiences. But for me, the reason why I brought that to purgatory is because it was a place of learning. It was there that I realized experiences are everything. We touched on that a little bit in our discussion earlier, is that experiences were the very reason for being here, because it was through those experiences and the multiple life reviews that I was able to learn so much about my life and all the things that happened, not the least of which was some of the most awful things that happened to me in my life were the things that brought me the most bliss during this life review process, because I learned so much, and all those things that were troubling me, they all made sense to me now. So when I said it was a place of learning, it truly was, but it was for preparing you to return back to spirit and make sense of the world that you've just come from. We come to this world in ignorance in order to learn, to experience things. You know, when I was in spirit, it was different. It was more like book learning. Here is that you'll make mistakes that you can't make in spirit, and you see the effects of it, and you see what happens to it. And so when you get to that in-between state, to that between place between here and there, where you're preparing to return to spirit, that's why the learning is so important. And that's the similarities it was to purgatory. Since I was a kid, the Catholic religion has changed so much. And I am a Christmas and Easter Catholic still. and it is a cultural thing, because I love going to church. I love the smells. I love the people. I love the, you know, there are some rituals about it. I do love. But I think now the Catholic Church, they don't believe in the idea of hell and being punishment and those types of things. It's more of a more modern, loving perspective on the Catholic doctrine. So those are my thoughts about purgatory. But my purgatory, it was a beautiful place. It really was. And it made me realize that here's a beautiful place too, even when it's not.
Oh, no kidding. I love your enthusiasm and the way you're expressing yourself and sharing how you felt when you were in these places and kind of the realizations that you had while you were there going through the experience. But there's something you mentioned that I want us to focus on, is the idea of coming to planet Earth as a place to learn. And what it sounded like in your explanation was that in spirit form, you learn through theory. And in Earth, when you're here on Earth, it seems like you're learning through actual, you know, experience. It's not just theory anymore. It's possible that this might happen. You actually do it, then you viscerally have this physical experience. Is that kind of the idea that you get? Or how best would you describe the difference in learning as a spirit versus a spirit incarnated as Steve Weber?
So the way you described it, I would say, is like step one to understanding it. It really is. But what I would say is that, let me see how I can explain, is that when I was in spirit, like I knew things, like I saw, you know, I couldn't make mistakes because I had a certain level of awareness. I had the awareness of my higher self, not of this current Stevie incarnation, which is a beautiful, great incarnation, just as everyone's incarnation is. But no. It was more like I was aware of what happened in my life. And by reviewing, going through my life review once, I would experience things that happened to me. I'd be a voyeur. I wouldn't be seeing it through my eyes at the time. I'd be like a voyeur, like looking at my experiences. And what I began to understand is that once I was able to learn how to see spirit, now I could see why everything happened from everyone else's perspective. And so all of a sudden things started to take on a whole new light. And so things that happened in my life, well, perhaps I was very hateful and blameful towards somebody or to myself. All of a sudden I understood things in a different way because that I was able to draw upon all my life experiences and then use the grace and the brain power, the spiritual energy that I had as a spirit to really take a closer look at that and learn from that. So I don't think, it's not like they're separate things. You need them both. You know, because you need those experiences. And so each time I went through my life review, when I was done with the life review, my awareness was so much greater than what I started. I knew it'd be a tough day, you know, starting it, but I knew at the end I would feel this bliss. And this bliss, this desire, this hunger for this bliss drove my energy to learn more and to discover more through my experiences. And so yes, one is theory and one is practical experience. But in order to really gain your awareness, you need both of them. And that's the purpose of coming here, to have those experiences. And I think that's the place in the place between here and there is to further analyze those experiences for perhaps returning back to a physical incarnation or staying in spirit and continuing your spiritual evolution, perhaps as a spirit guide or to continue getting closer to being at one with the Creator.
Oh man, your enthusiasm, telling you that stuff's infectious.
I feel it. It's just such a, you know, you said it's love, but it is love, but the energy of love is such an intense thing for me and for us. It's like love is like the ultimate intelligence. And what I mean by that is like the warm and fuzzies are just the door. There's just a doorway. And I've been trying to search for a way to explain how what I mean by love is the ultimate intelligence. But and I'm just trying to search for something. But I was thinking of a way of explaining it the other night, and I'm not sure it's going to work. But I'll share it with
please
with
do.
You. Is that picture you had someone you had to take care of, and then but you didn't have to take care of them just to make them happy, but you really had to take care of them for them to really attain the reason why they were on Earth. And their thing and all these sacrifices that were made, and you want to really be able to steward them, you know, you would want to know everything possible, not just to cater to their whims, but to really be a mentor and a guide, a spirit guide for this person. What would you do? There's nothing that you would not learn. There's no truth. You'd want to be as close to everything that there is for you to be able to share that and understanding and to be able to guide them. What is that?
To me, that's
the ultimate intelligence. That's the ultimate love. You know, love just isn't to coddle someone. It's so important to do that. But that's just the entrance to the door. At least that's the way that Kathy and I feel.
Yeah. Well, I love that perspective, right? Because to me, unconditional love is really an acceptance of everything I know about you and everything that I'm still to know about you. With no desire to either change it, but just to support it so that you too can see the same in me or in anybody or anything else, right? And the best way to really help somebody is, you mentioned this, I think, is if you know a lot about them. The more you know, the more you can help them. If you know their weaknesses, their strengths, if you know their fears, their desires. Now, it also opens you up because you're vulnerable at that point. If you're sharing this information with somebody, it opens you up to be, quote unquote, potentially taken advantage of. But that's still unconditional love, because you're learning from that experience as well. And I'm not there yet, I'm not going to lie, but it's an awareness that I have as part of why we come to this place too. And so I definitely relate to what you're saying.
Well,
yeah.
I definitely did. And there's a lot there to unpack, because there's a lot of great stuff in what you're saying.
Please share.
And I just think that unconditional love is that sometimes people will allow them to get self in situations that are very toxic because of unconditional love that they have for someone. That's not unconditional love. That's love without the intelligence of love. And so, yes, unconditional love, but you really have to, I think most people, their idea of what unconditional love, I think to really understand at least what I feel, what unconditional love is, they really have to expand the way they're looking at something. You could say unconditional love to enable someone to do something very destructive. Oh, because I see them hurting, I want to do something. That's not unconditional love. You know, love is the ultimate intelligence, to be able to really understand them and to provide that guidance. And you said it, Lynn, in the beginning when you're talking about the Kundalini awakening. You know, once again, beep, 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 calling Steve, speaking my language. And that I've experienced so many times in Kundalini practices, people having that Kundalini awakening and having that experience, that spiritually transformative, oh, wow, the tingling that just rises up. I've seen it. I've seen it. And, you know, everything is about that awareness. And so, I mean, in my own roundabout way is that, yes, unconditional love is everything, but we really have to understand it, that we have to use that wisdom. We can't allow people to empower people to do very negative things. We have to understand what is a negative thing, what really is.
Yeah, that's the crux.
because I think it all gets down to Om Namo Guru Dev Namo. I honor the inner teacher with inside of you. And really what that is, that's a recognition, but that's also a pledge of understanding, that's saying that I know your purpose here on earth is to learn from your experiences through your inner teacher. I recognize the inner teacher in you. So I may provide mentorship and guidance through my example, but I'll never tell you what to do. I'll never quite cast judgment on you in a sense like whether your decision is right or wrong for you. I may cast judgment about how it affects other people and stuff, but for your path in life, no, these are the things. And so, the unconditional love, yes, is so important, but we have to really, truly, it's a powerful thing. And we really have to understand what love is, to really apply that in the way that I feel it.
Yeah. No, it's to a degree, especially here on planet Earth, I've come to appreciate that it's a subjective understanding. It's a subjective application as well, because you will define it within your own realm of how much your consciousness has expanded. And you use the word wisdom. And that struck me because I've had previous conversations with Jim McCarty, who is a fascinating individual. He and his partners channeled and brought in information from a sixth density social memory complex called Ra. The Ra contact, essentially teaching the law of one. But one of the interesting things with that information that came in was what we're doing here in third density. And I don't know if you were in purgatory, this kind of information was brought to your awareness, that there's kind of a graduation and a progression of each soul through conscious expansion. Actually, there was, because you had to mentor some little souls. But anyway, I digress here. But according to Ra, we're transitioning to fourth density. And third density is not the density of understanding. It's a density of choice. And as best as we can, with our intention, choose unconditional love, which can show up in so many ways. And sometimes it does show up in ways that affects other people in a painful manner. And even us ourselves in a painful manner. Tough love, if you will. Or what we might call evil or violence, in a sense. And when you mentioned it's not your place to judge the inner teacher within an individual who might be receiving messages about the spiritual lessons they chose to learn in this life. And you have no idea what that is. They are walking their path, right? That sort of overarching, I use the word global here, or maybe 360 in a spherical view of a single experience, is not really available to us in third density. And so it's part of the struggle. And what we end up having to do at some point is realizing that we have to build this intuitive knowing, not build or reconnect with it, and use that as our guide to make decisions that enhance our feelings of what we describe and understand as unconditional love in that moment. So I don't know how you feel about that, but
Beautiful. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I thought you were going to go, and this is something that I've been critical of myself at times. Sometimes my language is very, very common, you know, like I use words, very commonly, but wisdom, when I say wisdom, I often think is that, who's to judge how wise something is and how appropriate it is. And what's more is that, you know, and there's an old adage, you know, my father was a nut when I was younger. Now he's very wise, you know, it's a question about, you know, really, he didn't change. I changed, you know? So I acknowledge that point.
Yeah.
I use it as a term, you know, meaning knowledge and understanding and awareness.
Yeah. No, I love it. It's part of the Earth Life experience. But Steve, I want to use this opportunity here to create a foundation, and it has to do with language, because on Earth, Lord knows, language is a source of great creation, because if we're speaking the same language, we can do something amazing, but it's a very subjective thing. And if you can, as best, help us understand the difference when you're speaking about spirit, your higher self, your human self. And then it's interesting, in the place between here and there, you were able to observe yourself, right, as a voyeur is what you use. So who is the voyeur observing you, and then the spirit that is you, and then the higher self that is at, you know, at some point while you were in that place giving you information?
You're making my head hurt.
I'm sorry. I don't intend to.
No, I got it. I got it, because we had thought about that. And wow, that was a great question, about the difference between soul and spirit and higher self and those types of things. We had to think about that a lot. And first off, soul and spirit. In a lot of ways, you know, I use those terms interchangeable, but mostly I use the word spirit. Soul, I've often associated in my own mind to Catholicism and the Catholic word for spirit. Like different theologies have different words for spirit. Spirit is that part of you that's forever, that wasn't born, doesn't die, the part that is a continuation of consciousness from different earthly incarnation, you return to the same higher self, the spirit, and so on. So basically the spirit and the soul, and generally for me, is generally the same thing. The soul is more closely aligned to specific religions. Spirit is like a general term to define that part of you, that part of you that was born with the universe and the all that is. So that now your higher self, in the way that your spirit is always part of everything, and I can talk for hours about that. We skipped a lot, but your spirit is part of everything, and your spirit is part of everything, but your higher self is what your physical body is here to your spirit. Your higher self is in spirit. It's the actual manifestation of your higher self in spirit. I mean, the manifestation of your spirit. So your spirit is always in spirit. And when you're incarnated, just part of your spirit, at least my understanding from my experience, just part of your spirit is Stevie Weber. You know, there's a whole higher self there that is providing guidance for me. Not saving me from hardships, but helping me through hardships. And I have spirit guides as well who do the same thing. They're not sheltering me from pain or suffering. They're trying to guide me. That's why they're called guides, not shields. And so that's what it is. But really, it's the spirit that we're all connected. And one thing I learned in that place, once I understood spirit and they taught me to see spirit, or they, I use the word they, but there's no they, it just happens. But you know, once I was taught, I realized that everything has a spirit, that the spirit is all similar. And then we all are connected, but we're connected in the way that cells of our body are connected. Each cell has its own life, but together it makes up your consciousness. No cells are what may not be aware of your consciousness, but all those cells make up you and your consciousness. And just as that, each one of our spirits, each one of us, make up the consciousness of the Creator. The Creator and the creation are one. We are not two. We were born with the universe. Science and spirit say the same thing, that we're born in a creation, a big bang, whatever you want to call it. We're spread out into the universe. Your galaxies are born and destroyed and recreated. Lives are born and destroyed and grown, and awarenesses. All these things happen. This whole thing is played out till all the energy is used up in the universe. And we come back, once again, back to the singularity of the Creator, and all of our experiences and everything that we've learned adds to the consciousness of the Creator, the Akashic record of all that is. And that's what our purpose here is for. Our purpose as parts of the all that is, to learn and to grow and to raise our awareness through this process of the universe. Yeah. And so that's what I learned there. The spirit is everything. So when we say soul or higher self, the spirit is the Brahman. You can't cut it any lower than that. You could keep on dividing, but when you're out of things, you could always take away something, you could always make something smaller. What can you divide any smaller? It's the Brahman, the spirit, the all that is, the Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it, it's us.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. I'm not going to add anything to it. I'll just keep probing you here, because you're a wealth of knowledge now. And I really appreciate you sharing.
Thank you. I love this opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So, Steve, another thing with spirit guides you mentioned, and I love that, you know, there are guides, they're not spirit shields, is do we have here when we're on incarnated this whole idea of negative spirits and entities set to derail us from our path?
Okay.
That's a deep one. I know.
Well, it's all how you look at it, because that there are people who are working through very, very dark things in their life and expressing it to everybody around them. They could affect everything. And so, it's not like they're here to undermine you or your efforts. It's that they're on their own path, and that path may be in direct contradiction to everything that you're on, and your paths cross. And so is that a negative person, you know, undermining everything that you're doing, or are they living their life path and your paths are crossing? I think more things are like that. I think people, like, sometimes when things line up, it's just like, wow, in a good way, or when terrible things happen, it's like, wow, what happened? You know, it's just that I think that everybody's on their own paths, and sometimes paths intersect, and sometimes they intersect for a moment, a very critical moment, and other times it's for a lifetime, or, who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, and so when you were in purgatory and you were able to review your life, and you saw moments like that when paths crossed for you, where you were at the catalyst for somebody experiencing negativity, well, I guess if it's a path that's crossing where you're, you know, your lessons are not aligned, you're both experiencing some sort of negativity. What awareness did that bring to you? What were you able to glean by reviewing those moments?
I could tell you a story that I've just come to. It's just something that just happened very recently, and I haven't shared it yet. And I'm still kind of reasoning it out. But I was thinking about the spirits that I met in the place between here and there, like met's the wrong word, that I interacted with. And somebody had asked me a question that fueled this question for me. They asked me, did I see anybody who was alive there from my life? And at first I said no, but then I thought about it, and yes, there was. There was Kathy's, and there was this other fellow. His name was Wendell's. This guy who he crossed my life in such a long time ago in computer stuff. And he crossed my life. And at the time, I didn't know. I didn't know why. And I took special notice of him for a whole load of reasons. And then while I'm pondering this and I'm thinking about this, this guy Wendell's calls. He's in Haiti. He's just had an earthquake. He's this character. He just, you know, I was doing business with him in computers, and every 6 months he had a new business, and he was like a go-getter, and you know, he was on like a visa, got kicked out of the country, some long tail, but he talked to me for a few minutes, and that was well, what was it? We reminisced. He asked if I could help him with his computer. You know, I told him that it wasn't something I did anymore, and so that was it. But then I remembered how they taught me to see spirit. Wendell's was there. He was there. This guy, I hadn't seen him since I haven't seen him in like 10 years. And I hadn't talked to him since. For him to call me out of nowhere. And then just as I was pondering this, and then I remembered he was there. And the way they taught me to see spirit, you know that was one of the first things that I learned. And once again, when I say they, there's no they. I just say that. Yeah. Is that what Wendell's did is I saw Wendell's there, and he's alive, but I saw him there, and so he's a character. He's a jokester. He's like speaks French and some other language I don't even know. And he goes in and out of the languages when he doesn't want you to really understand what he says. And you know, he's just a character. And so I saw him there, and I said, Wendell's, what are you doing? And he starts interacting with me. But the first things I noticed is he hadn't changed at all in 10 years. And so that was it. And then I saw him again. And then he was a character. He was messing with me the way he always does. But he was like 10 years older. I was like, wow, something odd was happening here. And then over a period of time, I kept on seeing him, and he kept on changing his age. Sometimes I'd see him as a little kid, and I'd still be able to notice him. And so over a period of time, then he would change into being like a woman. Or he would change into being like a 8 foot tall wrestler or a ballerina. And no matter, as I got over time, I got better and better at recognizing him. And then I started to not have to actually see him. I was able to like start to see an aura when I start to feel his energy. Then when I start to feel his energy, is that and he was messing with me the whole time. You know, that was it, that was a torture. I wish I could express it in a way, but he's such a character, and he was using it to trick me. Like he was playing a game, trying to trick me each time. And then when I got it, he was like, you know, you got me. That kind of thing. And he was messing with me the whole time. His role in my life was that of a mentor. He was teaching me. So how could that be so? How could that be so? How could he be here? And how could he be teaching me there? Is this really happening? Or is this a show for Stevie? And then I thought, and then the next thought I had was Kathy. Kathy was there in her higher self, and she was praying. And then there was more into, we discussed that in the book. And so I came to the realization for the first time is, number one, is that really your higher self is always in spirit. It is. Just part of you comes down here. And for the human experience to learn, your higher self doesn't go on hiatus when you're learning. And I use the word down. It's not down. It's just, yeah. You know, but so it was like Wendell's call. Hey, Stevie. He calls me Stevie. You know, and you know, for him to spark all of that, that was no coincidence. He didn't call me out of nowhere. That was all, but he didn't, his physical incarnation didn't know that, but it was his spirit. And so who is this person in my life? Is this person just somebody Or it, was there a purpose there? So these are the things I ponder. These are the things that I help to understand better, not only from Kathy and discussing with people who are explorative minded, but really after I come out of meditation, you know, we meditate a little bit, it turns on. I don't know how to say it. You know, really, I think if people meditated more, the world would be a lot better place if they just knew how. And that's yeah. and that's really the key. And we do cover that in our book. And we're also working on another book called Lessons Learned in the Place Between Here and There. And we have five meditations in there that really try to reach out and help people to not only get in that state of mind, but to direct that energy. And we were talking how why did I reach out to you? Is that because of the meditation? Because I really think that we do have this energy in here, all of us, that we could harness. It's not hokey pokey. If not, it just makes you feel better. But if it really does,
yeah,
if you really can channel that energy, it's worth a try. Because if you fail, you just feel good. Whoops.
So I just, it's funny that you're saying this. I just created a post where I talked about the biggest risk of meditating is becoming yourself, which is also the biggest benefit. Like, what's the worst that could happen? You know, what's great about this story you just shared with your friend from Haiti and him being, you know, in the place between here and there where you were, is how long after the fact that you're still distilling and coming up with these realizations about all the lessons that were available to you in that time while you were there.
Yeah.
Which I would love for whoever is watching or listening to this conversation to get this book and listen to it. But if you can quickly, Steve, just go through the three different, you know, experiences that you had while you were there, the three main ones, and what those major lessons were in each one. Because I loved those. Those were beautiful. And I think it would be great for you to share that. Since
Thank
that
you.
Was
yeah.
your experience. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. The first experience I called it learning the language of the universe. But really, as I began to study and understand this experience, and I started to see other spiritual literature out there, is I began to understand it as you are syncing with the Akashic Record. The Akashic Record being a record of all the experiences of all the universe. And we had talked about that, as I believe that to be part of the consciousness of the Creator. But in that first place was where I was taught to see spirit. And we talked about how Wendell's was there, and he was teaching me through changing his form to be able to notice spirit. And once I understood spirit, I could begin to feel spirit and energy and everything. Then I realized the connected nature of everything. And so all these realizations fed into one understanding and one understanding in this place. So the first place was kind of like spirituality 101, but really what I've learned it to be called later on is syncing with the Akashic Record. And then the next place was where I did my life review, and we had talked about that a little bit, about how now the next step is to make sense of everything that's happened to you in your life. You've made some sense of it as you've lived, you know, you've lived and learned, but other things you haven't been able to come to terms with. So then I went through this multiple life reviews where I went over and over again. My life is a voyeur, and my awareness raised each time that I kept on doing it. Over and over again, it wasn't that there was a consciousness beyond myself that was saying, okay, Stephen, you didn't learn enough, one more time. It was that as long as I kept on learning, it drove the process. Same thing in the first place where I was syncing with the Akashic Record. As long as I kept on learning, it went on. As soon as I stopped learning, then I found myself in the next place where I was going through the life review. And then finally, I was in a place where I later learned I was being tested on my knowledge and everything that I was learning, anything I had learned. And I was put in charge of these kids where I had to teach them a task. And the kids didn't listen to me. Well, whatever I did, they would say, I was like, I see you, you see me, we're watching, go team, bump. No, they would scatter. And no matter what I did, and then it was then I was in contact with my higher self. And I stood beside my higher self, and it wasn't that my higher self told me anything, but once I was in my grace and I came to that understanding, like, all of a sudden things became very clear to me. I realized I wasn't there to teach them a task. They were spirits who had yet to have an human incarnation. They had grown spiritually through many different incarnations, the way spirits are developed through being different animals and plants and planets and just being part of different spirits as you're evolving. And my job was there was to shepherd them into their first human incarnation. It was a job I failed at first because that after I learned all these wonderful things about spirituality and all this wisdom, and Steve's a walking guru now. And so now I'm with these kids. The first thing that I see is a group of dopey kids. I don't see really spirits. I don't see that they are on their own human experience, just as spiritual as I am in every way and just as understanding. And once I came to that understanding, everything changed. And so then I was able to provide that guidance. And so those were the three places. But Stevie had his own words for everything. And I really didn't fully understand it until one day I was at a yoga festival. And this guy, Jaidev Singh, I'm telling you, this guy looks like, I'm sure every time he goes to the airport, he gets strip searched. You know, he looks like something I don't even want to say. And he was talking about this idea about the five blue ethers. And he was talking about how Nanak, he's a spiritualist from the 16th century, credited with the founder of Sikh religion, but really the writings, the people founded the religion. He wrote that. And he had a near-death experience. And he wrote about it, and it was that first helped me to understand so much about that he wrote of the five blue ethers, and that it's a process that your spirit goes through to return and to evolve from the primordial creation into at one with the consciousness of the creator. And so they go through these five steps. The first step is what I was at. I called it syncing with the wisdom of the universe, but really it was sharing my information, everything that I learned with the all that is, and understanding certain lessons. So they call that the first blue ether. The second blue ether was where I was, I went through my life review. And then after my life review, I was tested on that life review. That's the third place where I'm tested on my life review. And based upon my understanding, and once again, somebody's not judging me. Like things just happen. And based upon that is that the third blue ether is that you will either go on to be a spirit guide, to stay in spirit and to guide others, or you would return back to human form to continue to have experiences and evolve. And so those are the first three blue ethers. And then they also go to talk about five and six and four and five blue ethers, which all ends with you being at one with the consciousness of the creator, returning to the singularity. And so, but all this is, as I start to understand religious teachings from many, many, many cultures, the one common element is that there's a near-death experience, a revelation, and then the writings. And so those are the things that really helped me to begin to understand and take a look at my experience and put things to way in the same way that each time I did my life review, it increased my awareness and I was able to do it again. Each time I go through reviewing my experience, my awareness is raised. I mean, in a real way. And then when I review it again, like I come to other realizations from my awareness as I understand things. So that's Stevie's really long explanation, but I hope I answered it.
You think that's long. I'm here thinking I have 75 more questions to ask just about this thing you said. So we could really talk all day about this. Seeing spirit, is that a gift or is that a skill that you brought into your current incarnation? Brought back?
Number two. We all have it. And then that's what I've come to learn is that by Wendell's like showing me all different forms, I really at first had to walk down this path. How all of a sudden you see spirit? Oh, I see spirit everywhere. No. It's that you have to walk down this path of learning that your inner teacher has to walk through these steps. And so, I'm not sure I'm explaining it well, but definitely to see spirit is that it's, first off, it's an energy and everybody has it. But so now that I could see spirit a lot more than I used to, Now I look back at my life, there were times when I was seeing spirit and I wasn't recognizing it as spirit. And once you start to see spirit, you recognize it more, and it seems like spirit communicates with you more. It really does. It's almost like once that communication channel is open, the communication happens in a way that just can't be denied, like through signs and synchronicities. Sometimes we talked about there's no luck and there's no coincidences, you know? It really is that so many times it's like spirit really giving you guidance, and you just have to open up your eyes to really understand it.
Man, I'm going to pause my initial train of thought and use this as a sign to pivot and ask you this question. Now, in your book, you shared the loss of, you know, a child, which is a tough thing for any parent. I'm a new parent, and I cannot imagine losing my sweet baby.
No, don't think those thoughts. No,
I know.
No, love and life.
Thank you so much. At the same time, it's an experience that somebody is going through somewhere on this planet. It's like, it's something that happens. I'm talking to you. You went through this. Oh, what is it I was going to ask? It wasn't about coincidences.
Well, one thing is
dang
is
it, I lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. No, I could elaborate if you like.
Sure, go for it. Thank you. Sure.
Yeah. I lost my son, a beautiful young man, 20 years old, championship wrestler, New York State champion, piano, saxophone. I mean, he played the saxophone like Dizzy Gillespie played the song. Played the horn. He was just so great at it. He played it like a nothing thought. And I found him dead from a heroin overdose. And you know, all those terrible things they think of as a parent. But one of the things that eventually helped me to understand it and understand the meaning, like first off, if I did not have that near-death experience, I wouldn't have understood and been able to cope with losing my son. But really, it was the realization that life is eternal and that this place I was at was real. It wasn't like I got knocked on the head or I was in a coma for 3 weeks. I mean, I was in it for a long time, and I often thought it was like the drugs they gave me and stuff, and I always questioned the experience. But when I started to really come to terms with it and really understand it, I realized that my son was really, he was in that beautiful place, the place between here and there. And he was learning and he was growing, he was experiencing all those things. And I think to myself is that I wouldn't go back to a moment before the accident for anything. I certainly wouldn't want to live through it again, but if I had a choice of not going through it, no way. I would do it again in a second. I wouldn't think. The only thing I would feel bad about is all the pain that I caused other people. But truly is that understanding that really, that it really, I fully understood that my son was in a beautiful place and there is life. And we've gone, just as I saw Wendell's and Kathy there, I'm going to see him, but he's not going to be my son there. He's going to be his higher self. Who knows? I'm looking forward to that thing. I'm almost like the big reveal, you know?
Yeah.
And I do, I'm going to miss out on so many things, but also there's so many beautiful things out there. And that's really the theme of our book, is that life is good and people are good, even when very sad things happen, because life is about experiences. And like I said, in that place, some of the worst experiences in my life in that place, that, you know, once I understood them, brought me the most bliss. So you really have to keep things into perspective. And so, but now that I understand spirit, that spirit can communicate, that now I do receive messages from my son. And that brings me a lot of peace. And at first I didn't recognize them. But then when I first started recognizing them, I started to do the oh wows, like, oh wow, grandma or someone's trying to reach me. But once I started to put the oh wow away and start really drill down into it, is why am I receiving this message? Once I started to do that, I started to get very impactful messages that I knew were from my son, Nick. Like, for instance, Kathy and I were walking on the beach, and this is in the book. We have a picture of this and everything. And Kathy was sending healing energy to the world, you know, because of the health crisis we're all going through. And she was praying to Saint Germain, the violet flame, and she wanted a sign that Saint Germain was hearing her. So she asked for violet beach glass as a sign. And that's like hen's teeth. I mean, we hike the beach every time. You would find a diamond ring way before you would find a piece of violet beach glass. And so we walked all day. We couldn't find it. We're leaving. And then we see this happy, you know, Dalmatian puppy
you know, jumping around. It comes over, jumps all over us. The owner comes running up and she says, "Oh, I'm sorry." And we're like, "No, it's okay. We like doggies and everything." And so I said, "So what's the dog's name?" "Violet." And it's a Dalmatian puppy. There's no way you name this dog Violet. There's no way. How does this dog named Violet? And so Kathy didn't get it. She still had her pussy face on, no Violet Beach glass. And so I'm walking away, and she says that, and I look at her with clenched teeth. I say, "Kathy, your dog's name is Violet." You know, it's like, "Hello, is anybody home?" But I said to her, "We have to find her. We have to find her. We have to find out why her dog, why this sign?" And so we found her a few weeks later. Her son died tragically as well as a young man, and she was coping with that as well. And we were able to talk to one another, and we became very good friends, and we share a lot together. That was my son reaching out to me, her son reaching out to her for that moment of intersection in time, kind of like Wendell's, that moment of for us to be there at that moment, for us to share. I thought I was helping her. It was the equal exchange of energy, like so many of those things. And so those are the things that really, how does that happen? Really? Reason it through. You know, I'm a computer guy. I'm an engineer. That's why it took me so long. You know, but like on some of these coincidences, I can do the math. Yeah. You know?
So. No, I appreciate that story. And you actually did answer the question that I was, you know, pausing my train of thought to ask, which was recognizing when spirit is communicating with you. And I picked, you know, to bring up your son, because in the book you discussed that after he passed away, you were a little apprehensive, right, to some of the messages that you were getting. And thank goodness for Kathy being by your side and continuing to probe. And that's the way I picked it up from the book. But what you describe is so beautiful, and it makes me appreciate that conscious expansion is literally seeing more of what you're already seeing. Like, you're seeing the exact same things. You know, I thought when I had a spiritual awakening, I'm going to walk around and everything is going to be looking like, you know, just a beautiful scenery of painting, blah, blah. And it's like, no, I mean, the computer looks exactly the same, but there's a feeling of knowing, like you said, that there's so much more that comes into it. You're able to appreciate that it didn't just show up here. There was a huge amount of energy that's been expended by different people, many of them you don't even know, and all of that energy is infused into this moment that you and I are creating right now, for instance. So, and that's good. And I want to highlight this too, that, I should ask you to share this. I get from your experience that judgment isn't somebody else passing judgment on you. At least that was your perception. Can you speak more to that, please?
Yeah. And that's really important because and not even you're not judging yourself. And it's not my consciousness is so high, so I'm above judging people. No, you don't judge people because it's not effective. It's not the right thing to do. It doesn't really help your understanding. Is that what is your progress? What's the metric, the yardstick for measuring your spiritual evolution in that place, your attainment of bliss, spiritual evolution and attainment of bliss. You could use those interchangeably, but what really drives that? Let me just think for a second. Help me. I forgot what I said. That was my train of thought.
I didn't want to interrupt you there.
This is the part where I tap Kathy on her knee and she looks up and she fills the parts. So go ahead, tell me.
No, I was asking about judgment.
Thank you. I got it. And so that's all well and good. But as you attain that bliss, is that what drives that bliss? It's that it's your growth. So how are you judging yourself? You're not judging yourself. The more you feel bliss, the more you're on the right track. It's not like you could say, "Oh, I did really well," but you don't feel bliss.
You're not on the right track. You say, oh well, I'm the president of the universe. It don't matter. It's not real. You have to feel the bliss. You could be very critical of yourself and prevent you from attaining things, lacks of confidence, or you could be overconfident and not do your homework. There's so many things there. There is no judgment, because that the only metric is your growth and your awareness. And so, like, I've found, you think that people have hate or animosity towards others, and that's what's the biggest infirmity that somebody experiences. No, it's shame and regret for themselves. That's really the thing, because nobody can cure that. Nobody can fix that but you. And if you have that blockage, see, that's one of the things about being in spirit. It enables you to do away with the blockages, so you really understand why things happen and they make sense. It's when you have that blockage of intense, regret or terrible things that have happened. Like, I look back at my son and I looked at all the things that, what did I do wrong, and all the different regrets. And it really is. And you could look at everything in your life, but really you just have to understand is that you have to make sense of things. Nobody's perfect. You live, you learn, you grow, and that's the reason for life. You make as much sense as you can here, but if you don't work it out here, you're going to get a second chance to think it over.
Did you get any information about how many times you've been in human form?
No. I get asked those questions about like bigger things. Like, my whole spirituality is limited to my experience. I purposely don't get involved in other things, because I don't want to know. I want my experience to be pure from that. I mean, I pick up things as we go along, but I'm not gonna. No. I have to. I'm still, through meditation, through realizations, I'm understanding my experience more and more. I'm not like coming to. I'm not in, new things. It's that from the things that I know about, like I understand the relationships different as I learn and grow. And so I hope that answers your question.
It does. I mean, I've always found it fascinating that I don't know if you ascribe to the whole idea that we go through this veil of forgetfulness, right, where there's a limitation. Oh, you perked up there. So, do you want to speak to that?
If we're speaking to the same thing, I mean, we may not. But what I was speaking, how you come to Earth in ignorance, and that your past experiences are not with you because you have to learn new. But how do your past experiences guide you now? Not only through your higher self, but it's through your intuition. It's that it's that you know things. Why does this come naturally to me? Why do I like this? Like, for instance, I'm the only biker who has this thing for tea and teacups and little teapot. You ever want some wine? What's up with that? Exactly. I love like soap. Like, it's crazy. I can say a lot
of
stuff.
You're probably like a British aristocrat back in the day. Who knows?
Or I was a servant. I had to make sure everything was nice and neat and prim and proper. If it wasn't, I got, but those are the things. You have to come and, I get excited and then I start stuttering.
I hear you.
I come in ignorance, because that you use your intuition to guide you. You have your spirit guides, your higher self to guide you, not shield you, but to guide you. And I think that's why, if that's what you're mentioning, the reason for coming down in ignorance. But I think that because it's a natural process, some people are 7 feet tall, some people are 4 feet tall, it's like a variation. And I've sometimes, I don't think all the stuff gets erased, or you're still connected to it while you're very young. And then as you get older, you start to lose that connection. Because I've had personal experiences with kids saying things to me that, wow, like especially young kids. And I could see their spirit, because I could almost see them as adults. When I look at them, I could see, that's one of the tips of seeing spirit. Like, you could see them in every shape or size they could possibly be. And I could see, like, wow, I want to see this person in 20 years, but there it is. And so nothing's perfect. It really is, because it's all natural. At least that's my understanding, at least what I got. I never experienced anything where I felt there was some master hand guiding everything. It was like, it's this brilliant intelligence of the creation that everything works. Mm-hmm. Everything works. If we're going to reach up, after we're done with this, you're going to reshuffle the cards and do it all over again. I think. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I have no insight into that. And that's really the big question in my mind is why. I could see how the creator, us as the creator and the creation, evolve over time and we become more insightful to what ends. I don't know yet, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, well, that's so crazy because you just literally answered my next question, which was, you know, after going through all of this, why are we doing all of this? And you basically just answered that. And so, right, we started this conversation to answer the question, life is eternal, beautiful, and, you know, perfect as it is. And you wrote this in the book. And many people, I would say even me, sometimes even now after my spiritual awakening, but for sure before, and which was a catalyst for me to start meditating and going down this spiritual path, was trying to reconcile the dichotomy of planet Earth, right? The pain, the suffering, the anger, the violence, the joys and the celebrations. Like, these two things are just right here in front of you all the time. What gives? And if they're here and somebody is going through the hardest kind of experience, how can I sit here and say, huh, guess what? It's all perfect. You know,
oh, there's so much stuff there. Oh, wow. I mean, there's so much stuff there. Okay, first of all, I just want to pass on this one thing really quick. Is that it's always been at least my criticism. I'm having difficulty understanding the way the India caste system works, and that everyone's born to a station in life. They can't leave that, and that's almost like in my. And I don't mean this is from me. I don't want anyone. You know, this is just Stevie just reasoning out loud, is that it almost seems like there's almost a cruelty about it, because that each one says that, okay, this is their reason for being incarnated, to have this experience in that job, in that terrible existence or that wonderful existence, you know, because they firmly believe that. And so it's almost their job to like treat them in the way that they're supposed to be treated for their caste. And it almost, you can almost develop almost like a cruelty about it, you know. It really is. So that's my digression, you know. So I think about that a lot. But when I was speaking to Jai Dev, the gentleman, you know, I talked about first discussed the five blue ethers. I talked to him a little bit, and he asked me that question. He's a California political activist, you know. He loves to play basketball and rap music, and it's so funny to watch him play basketball in his turban and his long beard. It's something out of it. And he's a kid. He's an American. He's a kid, you know.
Yeah.
I think he's a Jewish guy. You know, I bet his name is you know Bernie Malmsteen or something. But he's a great guy, and just and so he asked me about how I felt about politics and about in the world. Like, it was really something on his mind, and I told him it's just perfect the way it is. And his mouth dropped, like it was like, you know, all of a sudden the warm and fuzzies went out of the conversation. You know, and we really didn't have enough time to talk about it, but really is that I don't think you always have to strive to make life better, but it's never going to be a utopia. Even when we live in a scarcity free society, there's always going to be troubles. I mean, it really is. So why wait to be happy? Why wait to, you know, life is easy to be happy. Be happy now, you know. But it really is true. But that's part of the learning of life. We can't control all these terrible things, and it is sad. But think about your incarnations. How many terrible things have happened to you, and so many. These are essential spiritual growth. It's not for you not to feel and help. You have to help. You always have to do what's right. In learning lessons, you don't make yourself, you know, do stupid things and put yourself in terrible situations just because you want to learn a lesson. No, you're not learning any lesson that way. But in the same token, is that the world is never going to be an oasis of beauty and love and light. Because that's not the purpose of the earthly incarnation. I mean, it may change. I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, I'm smiling because that was one huge realization for me, right? Yeah. You're not going to create an external utopia on this planet. And I just kind of played that out in my head and came to the realization that if I did come out here and say, this is what a utopia looks like, let's all create it, I'm going to be crossing paths with somebody who disagrees. And if I push really hard to ensure that my utopia becomes a realization on this planet, you easily see how that could turn into violence, a world war, etc., where people are like, who do you think you are to tell me what my utopia is? And so I feel the same way, that planet Earth is not designed for one person to control everything. It can't. That's not what this place is. And if it were, you would not come here. Because if you left a place like heaven or even purgatory where things were so much better, why would you come here to come and, you know, try to change everything when it's already the way it is? You would, if you wanted a utopia, you would just stay there. But, you know, two things I want to add here. One, you highlighted that you came in contact with souls who had not even had a human experience. And it made me think about the movie Soul, which discussed kind of in a very new, nice way that you have to go through a validation or a checklist. You have to attain a certain level of soul growth in order to even incarnate on this planet, which makes me appreciate everybody here. I talk about it in my book right at the beginning when you open it, the epigram. For you to be here right now just speaks to your bravery, your ability to manifest, if I want to throw that word out, and how much soul growth you have already achieved for you to come and play this game, to experience in this environment. But well, as part of the ignorance, as part of that veil of forgetfulness, we forget, and we may in our minds think that the utopia we already have available to us at all times, it's outside of us, but it isn't. And so, yes, I could go on there, but I do believe that.
Oh, me too.
Life is perfect as it is, but...
No, it really is true. And you did touch on something that I really want to talk about, is that when you said about learning and being in the utopia and about you wanting to fix it, and that's still going to go on, it's like, I think there's a big wisdom lesson in there, in the sense, like, for humanity to learn is that okay, you would think that you bring love and light and everyone's going to accept it, but not everyone's going to accept it. So in and of itself has the foundations of not being able to build that utopia. And now, see, there's the struggle, there's the understanding for you to work towards that end. And that really is to like we were talking about the caste system, it's almost like that's okay. No, that's not okay. Is that we want to make it, and there is the lessons, there is the struggle, there is the ball game. Just don't look at the score. You got to play the game. You have to learn the lessons. And I think I think there's a lot of purpose in that.
Oh, for sure, man. We're a little over an hour here, and I feel I must invite you and Kathy, and it seems like your whole family, because your daughters. Fiance, I don't know if it's husband you mentioned, is into meditation too. Yeah. So like all of you need to come. We need to just have this powwow and talk about.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Spiritual topics of interest.
That would be a lot of fun. And I would really like, if you thought it was appropriate, for Kathy to come on, perhaps even by herself, and talk to you about meditation and about how that came apart, about the way that she views it, and perhaps you could share with her, and that the way she goes about creating purpose in her meditations, as well as attaining your state of mind and changing and channeling the energy. Because this is an idea that's out there, but we'd really like to try to channel it even more to more people, to get them to understand is like really the law of attraction. I mean, many people are familiar with that, is that by creating positive energy, you create positivity about you. But it's really the way you treat people. You treat people kindly, they treat people in their life kindly. You're mean to them, they go home and kick the cat, and it's really, it's about taking this energy and just directing it as attracting love and light. And like we were talking before, the worst thing that can happen is you'll feel better.
I would love to. I certainly would love to bring Kathy on, even by herself. We can speak about spiritual topics, you guys, and at some point in the future. But
awesome.
Anyone who's listening, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Please take the time to get the book. It's available on Amazon. Yep, mm-hmm. A Place Between Here and There. It's available on Amazon. And then connect with Steve. I'll have links to his... I think you're on Instagram. And
Facebook and our website. It's betweenhereandthere.org. That's a link to everything. But we have our website. We have YouTube, Facebook. But right now we're working on our next book, Lessons Learned. And wow, it's just such a... the book is evolving because it turned out to be just, this is lesson one and blah, blah, blah. This is, but all of a sudden, wow, just so many things are just bubbling up to the surface. And I, you know, it's a whole thing about just relating it to our real life. You know, it's about you could be a guru on a mountain and eat two pieces of rice a day and go home all day. But for most people, that's not the reason for being here. It's to really experience things. And that's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing. Hey, when the book is out, I'd love to have you back and we can discuss that too.
Thank you.
Your lessons learned. So, please connect with him. I will have links to Steve's website and also where you can purchase the book on Amazon. I'm in the notes section of this podcast and below if you're watching this on YouTube. And as for me, you know how to connect with me. I'm on Instagram at Roland at Chenjiang and my website, RolandAtChenjiang.com. You can get copies of my book as well. And Steve, thank you so much for this time. I really appreciate it. Yeah. And for anyone who's listening, as always, I invite you to create an amazing day.
Thank you. Peace. Satnam.
Likewise, my friend. Okay. We'll pause everywhere.